And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is November 29, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today we are going to salute twice the United Kingdom for the engagement of our beloved Prince Harry and his beloved Meghan Markle. And for the 100 years since the Balfour Declaration, Magna Carta of the Jewish State, incredible, paper that made it all a difference. And today, the 29th of November, it's 70 years since resolution, the United Nations Resolution 181 that recognized the Jewish State. So this is incredible date in history that we all celebrate. And, you know, I'm back. I know I was out a little. And please don't worry. I'm always with you and thinking and loving you. And I hope to keep it up here. It's just up to us to make, you know, a reasonable idea how life goes. But sometimes life takes us over to different things, just getting married and making all this incredible news about Cinderella story that we have. You know, girls, stories like that do happen. It's a lot of work, though. It's not easy. It's not easy just to be pretty, you know. It takes a lot of work. So let's think what we're going to do. We're going to talk about Harry, of course, and Meghan Markle and their engagement. Then we're gonna figure out what's happening actually in Iraq and Syria, if it's gonna be over soon. Then we're gonna talk about what's actually happened in Africa, and if we can have a nutrition situation there and how we can solve it. Then on that BF we have the World Food President. Executive Director David Beasley, which is a friend of mine that I honor and really a friend because we run for Senate together. So I call him a friend. He's leading one of the most incredible World Food Organization. So let's start with him. It will be number two, and we're going to have a long segment, but we're going to stop it in the middle, okay? So please, once you start being, you know, all religious and thing, we'll go back. But it's really a good guy that's making a great job in this world. All right, so we started with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. You know, some controversy talking about what really is we're going to expect with a baby. So we have Whoopi Goldberg, which I love so much, and she's talking on a panel with others. Let's listen about the pressure to have a royal baby.
But there is a fever. There's a royal wedding
love
fever.
It.
It's happening right now.
Yep.
It's making me very hot. But Harry and Meghan, not this Meghan, she got married to someone else.
No.
Sorry, Harry.
But
barely got their engagement announcement out of their mouths before getting hit with the inevitable follow-up. Take a look.
Children?
Not currently, no. No, of course, you know, I think, you know, one step at a time, and hopefully we'll start a family in the near future.
Did you say someone asked you a similar question?
Like 20 minutes after I got married.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of our friends was like, so when are you having babies? I was like, not tonight. I'm drinking.
As if you have to be married to have children. Look at this audience.
Exciting to see them. They seem so in love. It's a royal, you know, wedding, a royal baby. She's 36, he's 33, so they're not in their 20s. They're
a little bit older.
Yeah, right? She's post 35, and we know that there are sometimes fertility problems, so I think it's kind of normal to say, hey, when's the royal baby coming?
Well, they haven't gotten married yet.
Yeah,
you gotta get married
in the moment. Like, let them
mind their own business.
Well, why are they jumping to these kind of crazy conclusions? Yeah, let me have the rest of it. To royal heirs. I mean, isn't it going to be interesting to see what baby looks like when baby arrives?
Baby will be tan.
Baby will have a bit of a tan because, biracial folks sometimes can throw out somebody as dark as me or as light as Megan, and, you know, what will the Brits say? Be like, hey, this baby's a shh.
I think it's
tell the queen.
I think it's kind of wonderful. I mean, I do. I studied in London.
She thinks everything's wonderful about them. The couple is in love. This is wonderful.
No, I think it's kind of wonderful because I think the race problem that we have here in the United States is peculiar and specific to the United States. I think because
that's
of the history.
Well,
I think so.
Oh, no,
I think
no. It's France, lately, I've seen how segregated
it
is there.
But I think we have a history here of slavery, and so I think it's...
So do they.
But our history, if
they
I make complete
earlier.
My thought,
go ahead.
I think our history is unique in that sense. And so I think the Brits, while they have had their issues as well...
They were colonialists.
Yeah, but this is going to be an interesting and wonderful thing for them, because now I think it will change race relations there as well.
I don't agree with you. Really, I mean, look at this country. We had Obama for 8 years, and all it did was exacerbate racism.
Now, he was considered the first black president. I noticed that everybody calls her she will be the first biracial princess. Why do you think that is?
Because that's how she refers to herself.
She is biracial.
She's
biracial.
She's also American and divorced. And I believe it was King Edward had to abdicate the throne because he fell in love with an American divorcee. So that just shows how far we've
come. Can I just say something on that? There's a great documentary on Netflix about King Edward, who apparently they say he abdicated because he was marrying a divorced woman. The truth of it, according to this documentary,
tell us more, Joy,
is that he was totally collaborating with the Nazis.
Yes.
And that the British...
Oh, really?
And that the Brits, Churchill and the rest of them, were like, get him out.
Yeah.
And nothing to... Yes.
There are many, many fingers pointing.
You love those documentaries.
Well, that's great. He only watches the BBC.
We're going. Yeah. We'll be right back.
All right, that was Whoopi Goldberg and all the gang talking about the controversial idea that we have actually a mixed marriage, in a wedding in the royal house. And I think that it's so natural for Prince Harry to be such, oblivious to color. He loves kids. He loves people. He loves everything about the world. He goes to Africa, takes care of baby, dance with them. He is so right and righteous that for him to choose whoever is kind and worthy of him is so natural. So this world is changing on us, and we appreciate that. And this is a set example. So I'm not worrying. I'm sure he's going to be a very happy father. That's to say the least. Anyway, we have to keep on going. You know, guys, I've been missing you so hard. It was so hard, but, thinking even that, all the news all around coming and going, and in Israel, bless them, they keep you on your toes constantly. But this day is important. And this day, the 29th of November, represents something that we all miss. Now, we have a lineup that I organized, but it's not really organized by my thoughts. I can organize thinking, I'll try to keep it up, so I won't be jumping around like I did before. Okay, so please forgive me on that. So let's go on. I don't know if we want to listen to music now, but I think that Netanyahu announcing that he's going to open an embassy in Rwanda is something worth noticing. Think about Rwanda. The time of the Clinton, there was such a mess. And now Israel is opening maybe an embassy. Let's listen to that.
In Kenya, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in the country for a trip that will see him meeting with 11 African leaders. And he's already announcing that Israel will open its first embassy in the capital of Rwanda, part of the expansion of an Israeli presence in Africa. Owen, Prime Minister Netanyahu, his third trip over the past 2 years. This is his return to Africa policy. And Rwanda, how insignificant is that for Israel going forward?
And boy, is he pushing that return to Africa, Kalev. As you said, and as the Prime Minister himself has said, yes, announcing today the opening of that embassy in Rwanda. What's getting a lot of attention here? Of course, that deal, or the alleged deal, of Israel sending back migrants from other parts of Africa, not Rwanda, from other countries,
Sudan,
particularly Eritrea and Sudan, and sending them to third countries. What's the top third country on the list? Rwanda. Rwanda allegedly being paid by the Israeli government per migrant, $5,000, $10,000 per head to take people back. And again, this embassy seen as part of the warming ties between Netanyahu and Paul Kagame. Kagame, of course, himself a very, very controversial figure on the international stage. But again, part of Israel's return to Africa. By the way, I don't think it's only about the migrants. It's also about the bigger picture of the economic opportunities in Africa, a country like Kenya, 5 to 6% in economic growth a year, and of course, votes at the UN and the UN General Assembly.
Sure, and we do hear Netanyahu saying the same sort of thing we hear him saying about Arab countries recently, which is that countries we have not had ties with, things are changing.
Right. Well, that's not true in the case of Rwanda. This is a country Israel's had very friendly relations with, sometimes controversially friendly, but friendly relations with for a long time. But there are a lot of countries in the African continent that could be pickings for Israeli diplomacy. I think the strategy, Nurit, is for Israel to try to strengthen its bonds with as many African countries as it can, generate a ripple effect that will bring other countries in. Not that it's not being contested by the Palestinians, by North African Arab countries, and by South Africa. So there's still work for Israeli diplomacy to do.
But could that really translate into changing votes at the UN?
That's a big question, Kaleb. It's often said that the UN has a dynamic of its own. But the point, I think, is that Israel's trying. You know, we're marking today, tomorrow, the 70th anniversary of that partition plan.
Right.
So how much the Zionist movement back then invested in that vote in the General Assembly? We heard Israeli Ambassador to the UN, Danny Danone, talking about dragging delegates back into the hall. For a long time, Israel abandoned the General Assembly, or at least pulled back. Benjamin Netanyahu marking as a goal, going back and trying to invest again in those General Assembly votes. We'll see how it turns out.
Incredible. However, talking about Africa, Africa has a new opportunity. We're turning the light on. There are new projects that the former President Obama set in motion, and they are following suit. You know, not everything is being destroyed, like they say. They are organizing big contracts to build a network to light up that continent, which is beautiful. Think about it. We needed to be really blind not to see that we need to turn the light on Africa. So let's put a song, and then we'll be back after that. And we are back. That was Eros Ramazzotti with Tina Turner. Guys, it's early, probably in the morning. It's really, really loud. It's amazing. Sometimes I forget how concerts get really, really incredibly loud. Anyway, we are here. It's The Impossible Truth. It's Orly Benny Davis. And we were talking about resolution, UN partition plan. Resolution 181 that was made in November 29, 1947, and after less than a year, the Israeli independence took place, which was incredible. I think we have some motion of this. We're gonna try it. Let's see if we have the United Nations partition plan set. And, well, it was a long one, I guess. We cannot have it on. But if we go on, let's check on the U.S. troop that are actually in Iraq and in Syria. Let's listen up to that.
The U.S. could have more forces in Syria and Iraq than it admits. That's according to data provided by the U.S. Defense Manpower Data Center. Its latest report suggests there are almost 2,000 U.S. soldiers in Syria, while the official figure is just over 500. And for Iraq, the number provided by the Manpower Data Center is more than 3,000 higher than the Pentagon's. Well, however, the Pentagon itself says the numbers provided in the report were initial estimates for Syria and Iraq, including short-term deployments and the rotation of the troops. Well, let's discuss this further now. Let's cross live to our guest, Middle East analyst Ali Risk. Thank you for joining us on the program, Mr. Risk. Now, what can explain this discrepancy in the numbers?
Well, I think maybe, it's quite possible that the official numbers, or the real numbers, sorry, are higher than the official numbers which are given by the U.S. officials. You have to bear in mind that before the killing of four U.S. troops in Niger, many people didn't know, even probably the most of the world didn't know, that the U.S. actually had troops in that country. So bearing that in mind, one wouldn't be surprised to know that the real numbers of U.S. troops in Iraq, in Syria, elsewhere in the Middle East would be higher, given the fact that, this U.S. troop presence in Africa, Niger, and elsewhere in the African continent wasn't known. What also maybe could make it quite possible that the real numbers are higher than what is being announced is the fact that you have generals, many of President Trump's closest associates, the members of his cabinet, they are military men. General McMaster, General James Mattis, James Kelly, etc. And so they would be more prone to send a high number of military personnel abroad. At the same time, the U.S. public probably wouldn't receive that kind of deployment very well, would probably raise its objections, which would require from the Trump administration to maybe hide these facts and to increase troop presence without actually announcing it. So for all of these factors, it could be quite possible that we indeed do have larger numbers than what is being heard about.
Right, and this wouldn't be the first time the US has been unclear about its troop numbers in Iraq and Syria, would it? Let's just remind ourselves of a previous soundbite.
We have a approximately 55,000 Syrian, or 5,000, I'm sorry, I think it's a little over 4,000 U.S. troops in Syria right now that are supporting efforts in against Daesh and supporting the SDF.
That was Major General James Jarrod there getting a little confused. Why does the Pentagon apparently want to give the impression that it has fewer troops than it really does in the region?
Well, as I said, I think it's related to what I would call the post-Iraqi war and Afghani war syndrome. It's similar than the situation we had in the aftermath of the war on Vietnam, the American war on Vietnam. The same thing, the American public is exhausted. It's against any increase in troop presence. And so I think that the Pentagon is very intent on keeping this message that it has a low level of troop presence in order not to lead to an outburst or an outcry from the American public, which, as I said, is very war-weary and would be very much or would very much object to some increased American presence. So this is the current state of the American public. So I think it's mostly related to the American public and the fact that it's exhausted with these wars. At the same time, we do have generals, a lot of generals who want to increase or who want to maybe would be more prone to pursuing military solutions or having a military buildup in the foreign countries.
I see. So what about, we're hopefully nearing the end of the end of Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. When the battle against the terror group is over, do you expect the U.S. to leave a certain number of troops in these two countries?
Yes, I do. And in fact, Secretary of Defense James Mattis, he even said that very clearly. He said that after ISIS is defeated, that doesn't mean we're going to pack and leave. He indeed said we won't pack and leave after ISIS is defeated. So America will maintain its presence. I think that, there's a clear, there are voices, I would say, inside the U.S. administration, including Mattis himself and some others, who basically say that the U.S. can't leave Syria under quote-unquote Russian-Iranian presence, because that would mean that the U.S. has lost the game to Russia and to Iran. And so if you take that mindset of some American officials into consideration, it is indeed very far-fetched that America will pack and leave, as Mattis said, after ISIS is defeated. Maybe Trump himself personally would like to do that, but I doubt that he'll be able to confront the pressures from the establishment and particularly from his military advisors like Mattis and like McMaster.
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. The truth about the matter that when you are in global tension, you better have some food on the ground. Boots on the ground are the one that makes a difference between a win and a lose. And I don't think that any government, any army, military army that wants to win a battle or is predicted to be in tension zone should even consider contemplating it with the public. Because national security is the safety guards of all human beings. You have to have a leader that you can trust, that will send those troops, incredible troops, in arm way and bring them safe home. It's not easy task, and that's why having more sometimes on the ground will actually prevent some conflict. Now, we know that the tension in Syria is building up for the terrorists that are trying to flee out of the zone. Think about it. When you have Assad back in power, with Syria, with Russian in Syria that helped them settle down, you might consider the fact that those terrorists around them will like to flee. And when they want to flee, they will go to Hezbollah. Hezbollah is Iran base in southern Lebanon, and they will flee elsewhere. We don't know where. That's why we need all the guards on, eye on the balls, as they say in the Air Force. You must keep your eyes on the ball. Keep them. Maybe you make a list of the most wanted one and start checking them out, because it's not the time to even contemplate let them be, because they're gonna go and do some damage. Look what they did in Gaza, out of Gaza, in Egypt. They just killed last week 305 people in a mosque. And I don't think that they were upset about something, or they mad about something. Egypt was keeping a very good profile ultimately with all the neighborhood, and they were trying to keep the balance of power between the forces of Iran and the Saudis. But those killers that came up and killed those people that pray in the mosque, will pay the price, but it was awfully close to Gaza. So that's why I'm saying they're all drifting out and trying to invade other spaces. So this is the moment that they are on the move. This is the moment where terrorists are want to flee, because they're going to be after them. Assad is not going to keep them alive if they are rebels or if they collaborators of any other forces. And the tension also will be built in Lebanon. I'm sorry. So when you have Lebanon situated in such an incredible zone, and when you have on the south the Hezbollah and the north the forces of the Lebanese army, even though that they promised to be at the border, you would consider that something can ignite. And the Saudi are not going to tolerate any of that. As you remember, not long ago, Hariri, the Prime Minister of Lebanon, resigned and left to Saudi. And everybody was asking what happened. And some contemplated the fact that he might be under threat. And sure enough, he went to Saudi, to Arabia Saudite, and then he went to France. They spoke, and he's back. And he's on the job again, taking care of Lebanon. Because without Lebanon, without him in Lebanon, it could have gone to chaos, something that would be a very hard, tense things to do, and would give the Iranian the ground to conquer. If Iran is conquering another capital, I think that it will be it, because it will establish itself as the force in the north. And as you know, Israeli are not happy with that, and I know that they're not going to take it. But right now, the American and the Russian are playing the balance game, and we all in kind of a tango. And I hope that, you know, the wedding of the royalty maybe will give us some spirit, because we cannot take this kind of mess anymore. Now, there was a very beautiful interview of Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. Actually, it's their first interview. Let's see if we can hear that.
It happened a few weeks ago, earlier this month, here at our cottage. It's a standard, typical night
it's
for us.
It's a cozy night. What were we doing? Just roasting chicken and having
trying to roast a chicken,
and it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
Of course.
Was it an instant yes from you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I said, "Can I say yes now?"
She didn't even let me finish. She said, "Can I say yes? Can I say yes now?" And then there was hugs, and I had the ring on my finger, and I was like, "Can I give you the ring?" And she goes, "Oh yes, the ring." So no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us, and I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well. So.
Yeah.
And this is how long after you first met?
It would be a year and a half. A little bit more than that.
No, just about a year and a half. Yeah.
Have you met the Queen?
I have, yes.
A couple of times.
Yes,
what was that
true,
like?
A couple of times. It's incredible. I think, you know, to be able to meet her through his lens, not just with his honor and respect for her as the monarch, but the love that he has for her as his grandmother. All of those layers have been so important for me, so that when I met her, I had such a deep understanding and, of course, incredible respect for being able to have that time with her. And we've had a really, she's an incredible woman.
And the corgis took to you straight away.
That's true.
For the last 33 years being barked at, this one walks in absolutely nothing.
Just laying on my feet during tea.
It
was very sweet.
And I was just like, oh.
Speaking of dogs, have you brought yours to the UK?
Well, I have two dogs that I've had for quite a long time, both my rescue pups. And one is now staying with very close friends, and my other little guy is, yes, he's in the UK. He's been here for a while.
And you ended up making a very public statement about it. Some of that scrutiny was centered around your ethnicity, Meghan. When you realized that, what did you think?
Of course, it's disheartening. You know, it's a shame that is the climate in this world, to focus that much on that, or that would be discriminatory in that sense. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm really just proud of who I am and where I come from, and we have never put any focus on that. We've just focused on who we are as a couple. And so when you take all those extra layers away and all of that noise, I think it makes it really easy to just enjoy being together and tune all the rest of that out.
But now that it is all official, Prince Harry, do you have that sense that the combination of the two of you, your different backgrounds, that you together represent something new for the royal family?
I don't know if it's something new. I think it's for me, it's an added member of the family. It's another team player as part of the bigger team. And you know, for all of us, all we want to do is be able to carry out the right engagements, carry out our work, and try and encourage others and the younger generation to be able to see the world in the correct sense, rather than perhaps being having a distorted view.
Your ring.
Oh yes.
Tell us about your ring.
The ring is obviously yellow gold, because that's her favourite, and the main stone itself I sourced from Botswana, and the little diamonds either side are from my mother's jewellery collection, to make sure that she's with us on this crazy journey together. And
it's beautiful, and he designed it. It's incredible.
And make sure it stays on that finger.
Of course.
What does it mean to you, Meghan, to have those stones on your finger that once belonged to Princess Diana?
I think everything about Harry's thoughtfulness is, and the inclusion of that, and obviously not being able to meet his mom, it's so important to me to know that she's a part of this with us. And I think in being able to meet his aunts and also to be like Julia just different people who are so important to his mom, I'm able to in some way know a part of her through them and of course through him. And it's incredibly special, and you know, to be able to have this, which sort of links where you come from, and Botswana, which is important to us, and it's perfect.
What do you think your mother would have thought of Meghan or said about Meghan?
Oh, they'd be thick as thieves, without question. I think she would be over the moon, jumping up and down, you know, so excited for me. But then, as I said, would have probably been best friends with Meghan. So no, it is days like today when I really miss having her around and miss being able to share the happy news. But you know, with the ring and with everything else that's going on, I'm sure she's with us. Yeah, you know, jumping up and down somewhere else.
Talking about Africa, Africa is a continent that for some reason is back. Is back, and I was speaking around, you know, with my, I'm sorry, I'm bragging about incredible son, which talked to me about malnutrition and the function of IQ. When children are not eating well between the age 3 to 11, their brain cannot be developed fully. So anytime there are famine, there is malnutrition anywhere in the world, the children are suffering, and the next generation and generation after will be suffering from low IQ, and it will ruin the civil society that we live in. If you think that today, that with incredible success that we have in the high-tech and the development of a new world, we are actually reaching a new frontiers every decade. If anything happens to the food chain in the world, it's gonna bring the society, a civil society, backwards. So there is a malnutrition story in the USA that we want to listen to it.
Every hour of every day, 300 children die because of malnutrition. In America, more than 16 million kids aren't sure where their next meal will come from. We have all heard about malnutrition, but do we really know what it is and how it affects people in the U.S.? It does not only affect people in third world countries. Malnutrition is a broad term, but today we would like to address undernutrition or subnutrition. Individuals suffer from undernutrition if they are consuming an insufficient amount of calories, protein, and nutrients for maintenance and growth. Another form of undernutrition occurs when they cannot fully utilize the food they eat due to illness. Malnutrition can also be defined as the insufficient or imbalanced consumption of nutrients. Nutrition disorders may develop depending on which nutrients are lacking or consumed in excess. Children are the most visible victims of undernutrition. Children who are poorly nourished suffer up to 160 days of illness each year. Poor nutrition plays a role in at least half of the 10.9 million child deaths each year, or 5 million deaths. Health problems for children related to malnutrition include slowing of mental development, stunted growth, and increased susceptibility to chronic disease. Americans are forgetting that there are still people suffering from undernutrition in America. The two main things that contribute to undernutrition are poverty and food insecurity. Poverty is a state of having little or no money, goods, or means of support. In 2013, 45.3 million people were in poverty. They have to make impossible decisions between buying food, medicine, and paying bills. There are two types of food insecurity. Low food security occurs when there is a reduced quality, variety, or desirability of diet and little or no indication of reduced food intake. Very low food security occurs when there is a fear of not having enough food, missing meals, or going to bed without enough food. This can happen to both parents and children. But thankfully, there are many organizations trying to help this problem. The UNICEF United States Fund's main focus is to protect the children. They have many missions, offering aid to all ages of people in need. But when it comes to malnutrition, their mission is nutrition and food security. Help a child build a healthy future. We can all help with this problem by even a small task like donating food to a food bank. For people that are in a secure financial position, you can go to actionagainsthunger.org and give a tax-deductible donation to end child hunger. Action Against Hunger is trying to reach their 2014 goal. Every dollar counts.
All right, that was a beautiful one. It was an old one, 2014, but it's still effective. You guys have to understand, sometimes this food bank actually feed people and makes people better. So if you can do that, you can help, because there are so many possibilities for you just to drop a few cans or do some little caring and put some food away for those children, so we can have a better society. And you know what, we all belong to this world together, and sometimes person are up and sometimes they are down. You never know what happens the next time. Life is so short and so beautiful, and if you can help each other out, you know, your neighbor, your environment, your school, don't be blind to situation that you see. Don't pretend you don't care. Care for the other people, because there is nothing else in the world worthy more than another soul smiling and doing, you know, better because of you. And if you do that, you actually accomplish a very, very great task. You care for your neighbor like yourself. Now think about it. In our tradition, they say that you can win the world in 1 second. You can actually gain. It's like that second of a mile when you run the marathon and you come first. That second when you do incredible task and you succeed. That second in the world is when you're doing something really, really right in the right time. And you know that. And that voice in yourself that tells you what to do, and sometimes you will like to ignore it. That's your conscience. Conscience, keep it up. You know, it's really good if you listen to it. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to be diverse or invest in the world. This is your world too. If you clean up after, you know, don't worry. Don't make account who made this or who they made that. Don't be a little tiny things, you know, stickler. Get on with your life, keeping up, and see if you can make a difference. I know we all not perfect. Remember that we all human. We have bad side and good side. Try to keep your side good, so you be better every day. Anyway, I have a beautiful song that I always love to listen to. It's John Lennon, Imagine, which is that dream of all of us that wants to be in a better world. Let's listen to it.
Mr. President and the First Lady and the Deputy President and the First Lady, and the Speaker of the Senate, it's good to see each of you. Mr. President, your brother, I just saw him for the first time in months. It was good to see him, a friend. And Mr. Deputy President, your daughter was at my home just 3 weeks ago in South Carolina. And the President of the Senate, who went to my university, Clemson University. So we've got connections all over Kenya. And I think we have some friends. We had about 20, 25 friends from Kenya at my home in South Carolina about 2.5 weeks ago. I think some of them are here. If they would stand, wherever you are, please stand. Mr. President, I'm taking after you. I'm pulling out my glasses. For the king said, for I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did it unto the one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Every 15 seconds, a child is dying from hunger. 600,000 children are on the brink of death just in the next many months. In South Sudan, in Somalia, in Yemen, in Nigeria. Four countries on the brink of famine. And these are made man-made conflicts where unity does not exist, where words are cheap. What's on paper, what comes from our mouth, is nothing compared to what's in our heart, because that is where God measures the character of his creature. When Jesus gave those great words, when you did it unto the least of these, my brothers, you did it unto me. What was he really saying? Because his number one teaching.
All right, it started with David Beasley, the one that we wanted to hear in the beginning. I just wanted you to have that voice telling you how many children are hungry in the world. And this war that all men kind like to take on makes children suffer. And you know, guys, I don't care about your ego and about your masculinity. We are women in the world. We are pretty fed up with your positioning. And I'm serious. I love men and I honor them, but they should honor us. And all those claims that we have all over the world, and it's all part of the same attitude. It's a carelessness about everything. If you don't care about children, if you don't care about animals, if you don't care about women, you don't care about anything elderly, what left? You just left to kill yourself with others in the war zone, right? So let's turn that page of history. It's enough. I know that the fantasy of the man in Hollywood really is sick, because the movie that they're making is sickening. I am appalled so much with all those movies that show graphics of killing innocent or doing stuff that I wouldn't even dream, I wouldn't even know to that exist. I have to be constantly changing my channels or my movie. Oh, actually, I can ignore all the movies that are presented to us, because they're all violent. And you're teaching our children bad things. I know women got some liberty and got some power in the last decades, big chunk of my kind of history, women started liberating themselves and getting, frankly, divorced from all you women do what I tell you, I men do whatever I want, and, you know, mess around, go around, do whatever I want, I talk to who I want, I met with my old friends, and I brag about the other kid. You know, this all disturbed behavior created a situation where women are so much in the trouble of keeping their dignity. How much a woman can pretend she doesn't see, how much abuse she can take without leaving, how much she can say no, I don't want, and you know, and being forced on. It's women time. We don't want to rebel, we don't want to stand out, we just are calling you guys, like mothers, like children of the daughters of Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. We're calling you as children of this world, stop it, go back to your classes, take a class, do learn a habit, learn how to create something. You learn to destroy so much in the last 50 years. You're always on the war zone. You're always fighting. Men, stop killing. It's nature. Really, I know that nature has its own in the jungle, that you have, you know, to fight for your food and everything, which is something is perfectly normal. But getting the gang and starting killing, look at those children. They don't have, they're hungry. And worse, they don't get intelligent because they're hungry. And worse, they don't learn. You know how many alphabet people we have in the world? You know how many people don't know to read? Can you imagine yourself without reading? Anybody who has a phone, write constantly, read constantly, have a message, have a life, incredible, rounded information. And you guys don't care? And now I don't tell you that you don't care because you're bad. It's because you've been pushed around so much. Not because you're miserable. It's because life made you make decision fast. I'm telling you, there are not enough women in control position that we can take over, all right? But I'm telling you one thing sincerely. You guys made a war. Women will make the peace. I want you guys to understand that we need more women everywhere. But women that have good intentions and good heart, please, let's not think that all women are capable, like all men are bad. We are even, and we are in the same battle. Let us in. Let us get the moment in time that we can collaborate and help you guys make this world back to normal. It's not difficult. We need that space. We need you saying yes. You need us to let us in the door. I know that glass ceiling is awfully low for us. I know that glass ceiling that I'm trying to kick constantly every day. And me personally, when I'm running for this office for freaking 20 years and still not able to get in position because the men are stopping, the men, the most important men that come close, they are the one that stop at the end and say no. And that's where we are ought to get recognized. So by all means, I know life is good. I know life is beautiful. I know Cinderella stories can happen, and I wish them all well. I want more of those Cinderella stories. I want men that makes women recognizable, you know, head of a corporation when they worthy of this, and give them the task. Don't leave us the shamble to handle. Don't leave us the dirty stuff to handle. Don't let us collect those wounded and take care of them. Stop letting us nurse you guys when only you're sick. Let us take care of this world. It's our too, and we are getting to be we are the majority of that, the majority minority in this world. Do you believe it? And I'm recognizing that men control the world, and I know that for a fact, because God, the Garden of Eden, when men, Adam and Eve, eat the apple, the punishment of the woman was, to your husband your passion will be, and he will rule you. There was a God's world that he will rule. The man rules the women not because they're smarter, it's because God decided so. That was a punishment. Now, if it was natural for women to be ruled by a man, it wasn't a punishment, right? So instead, let's fix this world when we're fixing also that, by all means, under God. So I want to remind you guys all that there is a God, and it's not us. And we surely come a long way. We surely, now we are in the racketing part, Really? We built up and now you're racketing. Now we built a virtual one. But this virtual one needs to be interpreted. So without further ado, please, let's get together and talk. And those Muslim fighting, we need some schooling there. We need some talking. We need some love, a lot of love. Because they are very nice people that you find there. And they might influence others if we can get them together. All right, guys. So I hope that I'm back. I know that there was a mess here in this show, but it's okay because sometimes it's also nice to be messy. So you appreciate what you got usually. Well, that's the lame excuse, I know. What can I do? This is what it is, but it was incredible. But the tension that I had, and the willing and the love that I have for you all to bring my voice back to you so I can tell you how much I love you and I care for you and how much I want this world to be better and how much I ask for your help. Start being in the light. Start being the light of this world. Start being with us, the right, the good, the honest, the truthful. Stop helping those lame whatever. All right, you have to choose side. You cannot be in the middle. You cannot be careless and take care of life. Life is wonderful. It's yours. You know, distant world is exhausted because she cannot bring more the spirit of another world. For some reason we let it be and let the bad guys rules. I want the music, the news, the pictures to be all about another world that we all conquer and we get along, okay? So we can do it. It's up to us. And men and women, it's about time, you know, you keep your family together. Don't split. And men, get back to basic. Basic respect, basic honesty, basic I do my best. It's easy if you try. Just do your best and God will do the rest. All right, guys? I know been a long one. God bless you all. I want to salute you and thank you and thank Doug Newsom and Donald Newsom for this incredible station, BBS Radio, the voice of the people, by the people, for the people. Remember, we're always here for you. Love you. God bless you. Ciao, ciao.